But you know me, I will not sing the praises of a piece of gear that I don't love. And that piece of gear has earned its place, right? Like in our, at our home, in the RV, like it just has. Like you can't say it's not a great piece of gear. You can't.
It's 8 years old.
Yeah.
We still have the one, we have other ones too, but we have the one we got 8 years ago. It is a great piece of camping gear.
Hi, everyone. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we are the authors of Where Should We Camp Next?, Where Should We Camp Next? National Parks, and Where Should We Camp Next? Budget Camping.
This year, we are celebrating the 10th anniversary of the RV Atlas podcast.
We hope you join us as we cover the best campgrounds, the best RVs, the best food, and the best gear to bring with you when you go.
So pull up a chair and join us around the digital campfire.
This is the RV Atlas.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the RV Atlas. It's another RV Atlas Q&A episode. I've got Stephanie here sipping upon some tea, and I think that she's ready for vacation. I think that I'm ready for vacation. I think that all of you listening are ready for spring break vacation, and we're going to be off next week. So no podcasts next week because guess what? We're going on vacation, and Stephanie, you deserve a vacation.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'm going on one.
No, you deserve one.
I'm going on one.
So for today's RV Atlas Q&A, everyone's gearing up for spring and summer vacations. So many of the questions are like, kind of like people have their trips planned and now they have questions about what to do, or they're thinking about getting some new gear for the season. So we're going to answer questions about camping grills and griddles that are good for replacing the RVQs that are out there. We're going to talk about some great things to do in the Redwoods. We're going to talk about Lake George, New York, and we're going to end on the fascinating topic of tankless hot water heaters, which actually...
Surprisingly riveting topic.
Stephanie, I know you missed that Truma Aqua Go.
We'll save the discussion.
We'll save the discussion. All right, let's dive into this week's RV Atlas Q&A. But before we do so, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts. Our family has been staying at Jellystone Park locations for over 12 years. There are more than 75 Jellystone Park locations across the United States and Canada, and each one is unique. But our kids love them all because each Jellystone Park has fun attractions like pools, water slides, splash grounds, mini golf, laser tag, and jumping pillows. Plus, there are tons of activities all day long, such as foam parties, dance parties, wagon rides, tie-dye, and movie nights. They even have themed events like Chocolate Lovers Weekend, Christmas in July, and Halloween weekends in the fall. Of course, we can't forget the fun of hanging out with Yogi Bear, Boo Boo, and Cindy Bear. And at Jellystone Park, you can stay in your RV or enjoy one of their glamping accommodations, as many locations offer luxury cabins, yurts, covered wagons, and more. Make Jellystone Park a part of your family's vacation in 2024, because it's not just a campground, it's Jellystone Park. To book your vacation today, visit jellystonepark.com. That's jellystonepark.com. And don't forget to tell Yogi Bear that Jeremy and Stephanie said hello. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Our first question for this week's RV Atlas Q&A podcast comes from Jeffrey Broder, and then a similar question was asked by Mary Donovan Braglio. So Jeffrey wrote in to the RV Atlas group on Facebook. So we used a George Foreman grill on our first RV trip. We had full hookups. Was going to get a Blackstone, but did not want to pick up a 66-pound griddle. Looking for something that weighs less and is propane just in case we go boondocking and there is no electric and we can't use our generator. Any recommendations? Thanks, everyone. And then a second letter. These are not letters. These are people posting in Facebook, but I like to make it sound like there's a mailbag and we're pulling out letters. The second question was, you know, somewhat similar from Mary. I hope I'm getting your name right. Hi, all. I'm wanting to replace the crappy grill that came with our travel trailer's outdoor kitchen. She got a Forest River Surveyor. In a dream world, I'd like something that fits in the same space that I can also take out for tailgating, picnics at the beach, etc. Now, she didn't say how big that space is, but we'll do our best to answer the question. I'm considering getting a Blackstone for that space, but would still like a grill. maybe something like the Weber Traveler or Coleman Road Trip 285. Husband thinks I'm crazy for wanting two separate things. Would love to hear some other options. Is it overkill? Is it overkill, Stephanie, to bring a grill and a griddle?
Yeah. Well, it's not for some people, right? It depends on what their limits are, what their weight limits are, what their storage situation is. For us, we were not willing, unless we had to say one or the other. So even when, you know, we started to use the Blackstone a lot more, we still like the grill for a lot of things. And we've had that Weber Q how many years now? How old is that Weber?
That was our Fancy Gap Virginia trip to Great Smoky Mountains National Park when you bought that 10 years ago.
Okay.
Works like the day it was born.
Yeah. It's such a quality piece of gear. It really works well. Now, I will have to say, of course, if you do have to pick one or the other, and we have on certain trips, like we've gone on trips where we didn't bring RV, we were renting something, or we were staying in a glamping tent. And so we only had the truck to pack. And in those cases, we choose the Blackstone over the grill. And it's for a very simple reason. You can grill on the Blackstone. You can do
breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You can do steaks and chicken.
Well, right. But no, I mean, you can do steaks and chicken on both. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the fact that whatever you can do on the grill, you can do on the griddle. But that's not the same in reverse. So you cannot obviously saute onions on the grill. So if you have to pick one, we pick the griddle because of the fact that you can just do it all on there. And that's not the case for the grill.
Yeah, the griddle's more multi-purpose, and I think that's why it's been winning in the hearts and minds of so many RVers, because most RVers probably do want to bring one. I will say,
but it depends on what you cook, right?
It does. I mean, I'm a Blackstone guy through and through. We would do some work with Blackstone. I still love my Weber Q, and a lot of trips I bring both because I do like to cook over a flame sometimes. So I don't think you're barking up the wrong tree, particularly if camp cooking is one of your hobbies and you want to have a grill and griddle. Just bring a grill and a griddle. I think that that's exactly the right thing to do.
Think about your menu, right? Like, just think about your menu. What do you want to do? Like, if you want to make eggs for breakfast and you don't want to cook them inside, you're going to have two of something anyway. Like, okay, are you going to have a camp stove then? Right?
Good point.
Like,
so addressing both of these questions at once, both of these people are looking for, both Jeffrey and Mary are looking for something small or light.
Yeah.
And Blackstone did just come out with two new camping griddles that are suitcase style and less than 30 pounds. That's like half the weight of the other 17 and 22 inch Blackstone griddles. It's significantly lighter. I don't know if it's exactly half.
But the 66, help me figure this out. The 66 pound griddle really threw me off. Like, that's heavy. Which one is like, that's like,
I don't know. That might be the 28 inch Adventure Ready. Okay. I don't have the weights on all of them, but look, the new Blackstone suitcase style griddles are substantially lighter, but it is not a steel griddle top.
Right.
It's a titanium ceramic griddle top, a nonstick griddle top, which some people really like because it's easy to clean up. Other people only want to cook on cast iron or steel. So, but they do have this new lineup out of these suitcase style griddles. It very well may fit into that space for Mary and may very well be light enough for Jeffrey.
To tell Mary, you should say, like, you did do that with one of our RV, more than one of our RVs, maybe. You removed the 100%. Griddle that came along with it and put in the Blackstone.
I've done that on the last two RVs.
Yeah, I feel like it happened multiple times.
I literally removed the whole sliding mechanism. I just got rid of it as soon as I could because I wanted to put my Blackstone in there. Now, also, I want to say, I love the Weber Traveler. I have the Weber Traveler. I grill at home on the Weber Traveler. It is not that small, though. It has a folding cart and wheels. And just look at the dimensions before you were to buy or order a Weber Traveler. Look at the weight and look at the dimensions. Now, Weber just came out with the Weber Compact Traveler, which is an even smaller version. So you might want to look at that. And then also the Weber Q1200 is still out there, all right, if you want a grill. And that's a great product for a couple decades now. And Weber just released the Q2800N Plus, a newer version. as well. So if you want a grill and a griddle, there are lots and lots of options. Now, Blackstone does not make a straight up grill. They do not have a product that is just, you know, two burners and grill grates. Everything is a griddle or a griddle and a side burner or something like that. So there are options out there. A couple of people in our audience responded with some tips too. So Arthur Dando wrote in and said, the Blackstone, in my honest opinion, is the best piece of camp gear since the Coleman Lantern. Strong claim, Arthur. And I kind of agree, the 22-inch Blackstone is my favorite.
Look, everybody, bandwagon, blah, blah, blah. You know, people get like a little outraged by the fandom of the Blackstone. But you know me, I will not sing the praises of a piece of gear that I don't love. And that piece of gear has earned its place, right? Like at our home, in the RV, like it just has. Like you can't say it's not a great piece of gear. You can't.
It's 8 years old.
Yeah.
We still have the one. We have other ones too, but we have the one we got 8 years ago. It is a great piece of camping gear. Arthur went on to say, it'll do just about everything, not super coffee though. The road trip, meaning that Coleman with some accessories will do it all too, but it's a pita to clean, a pain in the you know what to clean.
Yeah.
And so I've heard that from other Coleman owners that it's a little bit messy and hard to clean. Thomas Vaughn wrote in and said that he had a Road Trip 285 with the swappable plates for several years. I loved it more than a traditional camp stove for sure, but sold it when we got the Blackstone and honestly haven't missed it since. For the rare thing I need a burner for, I just use the stove inside the RV. And that's a great point. Like if you need a burner and you don't have one in your outside setup, you just go inside the RV. Also worth noting, the Road Trip was awkward to transport because it takes up so much space with the built-in stand. And as much as I love that Weber Traveler, again, the built-in stand and wheels, which works incredibly well, makes it pretty darn big to store in an RV.
Yeah, well, it's attached. It's not flexible. Like, you have to have the space for it. So,
yeah, but I
hope
that
was one more thing I'll add here is that I remember back when we were new RVers many moons ago, it was very hard for me to comprehend that you would replace something that was new in your RV. And there's a few things that fall into that category. We cooked on that grill, that terrible, it's called the RVQ, right?
I think I think that's like a derogatory nickname. I don't know that
was
actually
I know that. I'm saying that's what people call it, the RVQ, right? It's just, it was terrible. But because I was stuck in my head, like this is new and it came with the camper, like it was almost like I was determined to make it work or something. And we used that for a few years before I was like, this is absurd. This is so bad.
It heats really. Bringing back memories of the pop-up camper.
It was
awful. I remember you complaining that it heated up unevenly.
Yeah, it would char and outside and be raw. You couldn't, it had terrible temperature control. The whole thing was terrible. And I just suffered through because I'm very like, oh my, like you would, like I wouldn't get rid of something that's new, right? Like that seemed terrible to me.
Now when we get a new RV, we chuck the RVQ out and we replace it.
And I was going to say the other thing is the mattress, right? It's the same thing. Like the way we suffered on early RV mattresses. Wow.
It was
before finally just realizing like, no, we're sleeping for comfort here. Yeah.
But part of the psychology there was that buying that pop-up camper was a huge splurge for us as a young family. Mm-hmm. And then I'll never forget when we went to Walmart to buy all the camp chairs and all the stuff we needed. I think we rang up a $400 tab at Walmart and we were like, oh my, $600. And it was
cha-ching,
like, oh, man.
Cha-ching. I remember feeling like the costs were really adding up. Yeah. So it took us a while to be in a position where we felt like we're going to buy extra stuff. There's one other thing that I think we just replaced right away, maybe more, but the shower head. So
Oxygenics for the WAN.
Right. Like, so you get to a point where you're just like, oh, new RV, time to swap everything out. It's a much different mentality now.
I have to say, look back so fondly on when you bought that first Weber Q1200, because that was the first Weber product we'd ever bought. We didn't have a Weber grill in the backyard.
I remember feeling like I was spending so much money on that.
Like we were stepping into the American middle class. My wife bought a Weber, not a Weber for the backyard. Well,
I mean, at that time it was probably 200. I don't know.
Probably 200 bucks.
It felt really like a ridiculous splurge, but now we still have it, right? Talk about value.
So anyway, for both of those questions, check out the new Blackstones. They might be for you. They might not be. If not, look at the classic Blackstones, the 17 and 22 inch. Check out the Weber Q lineup. Check out the Weber Traveler lineup. There's a lot of options out there to get something different than the RBQ. We are going to come back in a second and talk about Redwoods State and National Park. But before we do so, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Go RVing. Go RVing's website, GoRVing.com, is a one-stop resource packed with all of the information you need about every aspect of the RV lifestyle, from RV shopping to trip planning, with expert advice on everything in between. GoRVing.com is packed with incredible stories and tips and tricks that will inspire you to get the most out of your RV and enjoy every second of life at the campground or somewhere far off grid. Click on Go RVing's This Is RVing tab to start your journey and hit the open road. Want to learn more about the different types of RVs? Click on Go RVing's Explore RVs tab to learn more about towable RVs like travel trailers and fifth wheels and motorized RVs like camper vans or Class A or C motorhomes. If you still need help finding the right RV, GoRVing.com has a fun quiz that will offer you a personalized recommendation based on your family size, your budget, and what kind of adventures you are seeking out in your first or next RV. To find out more about RVing or to find a dealer or a campground near you, head on over to GoRVing.com. That's GoRVing.com. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It is another RV Atlas Q&A episode. And so many of the questions in the group are from people who have reserved their campsite for their big trip this summer. And now they want to know like what to do. Like they want activities. They want the best suggestions. And our group is great for that. So Amber wrote in and said, "We'll be camping in the Redwoods National Forest looking for recommendations on what we must see besides the huge trees, of course." And I'm thinking that she means the Redwoods State and National Park, because I don't know that there's a Redwoods National Forest, but Redwoods State and National Parks.
And they're both combined. That was hard. I remember when we went for the first time, it was like, wait, what? You know, it's a little bit of an odd duck in the national park world.
I don't know if there's any other one where it's several state parks combined with the national park into one organizational structure. There might be something else like that, but I certainly can't think of it off the top
of my head. But also very like hodgepodgey location wise. So, you know, you kind of have to like spend some time getting your orientation to your trip. Like because it's not like the typical national park. You go and you go to the visitor center and then you go to this area or that area. So planning, I think that actually planning goes a long way for this particular national park.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I might get a negative comment about this. I felt like the state parks were the highlight and the area that is national park, although it's all one cohesive organism, the area that is the actual national park would seem to be less of the famous hikes and locations, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, I don't think it's like, of course, everything like that is an opinion, right? What were my favorite parts? But I think that many of the most popular trees, right? Because there are going to be certain trees that everybody, you know, is going to go see. They are in the state parks. But I just want to say also that there is a national forest too.
Oh, thank you for correcting me.
Yeah, because they have, I know they have dispersed camping options.
And so many national parks do have a national forest sitting right next to them. Right. So I'm so glad you jumped in there.
It is just a very odd duck that way. So it can be a little confusing and it's good to take the time and really get your bearings geographically and sort of understand. This is the kind of place where I would really like watch some YouTube videos of people going and everything before.
Go find our old RV Atlas podcast. Google search RV Atlas Redwoods. We did great podcasts on this.
Yeah. And we also, it's also in the Where Should We Camp Next National Parks.
Yeah. Book. So Amber, here's what we did. I believe we spent three full days at the most in the Redwoods. We did not camp at the Jedediah Smith campground. We camped at the Redwoods KOA. But we went to the Jedediah Smith campground and we did the hike to the Hiachi Trail, which I might be slightly mispronouncing, which takes you to the Grove of Titans, which is one of the most spectacular and famous spots in the Redwoods for viewing incredibly large, incredibly beautiful, magnificent trees. That was a magical hike along the Smith River. You have to cross some small streams and you end up in the cool, shady area of that Grove of Titans. Mm-hmm. And then we did the hike back and then we stopped and we kind of picnicked there's a beach at the Jedediah Smith campground. There's like a little kind of rocky beach. I don't remember if it's sandy.
It's like a river beach. Yeah.
River beach. Mm-hmm. But it was such a wonderful, refreshing place to swim after that long hike. And we just chilled and relaxed there. And that was really a magical day that I think about all the time. It was the best day in our Redwoods trip. So doing that hike, it wasn't a super short hike, but it wasn't a hard hike. There wasn't elevation to it at all.
No, you just want to give the, you know, kids time to play on, you know, they'll want to play on all the fallen trees and, you know, like everybody climbs and stuff like that.
Yeah, but that Grove of Titans was, you know, mystical, spiritual, magnificent, incredible. So I loved that. Then the Lady Bird Johnson Grove Trail was really great, really easy, really short. And you can do that with a ranger talk/walk. I don't think we actually did the ranger talk walk.
Yes, we did.
I thought that they were doing, oh no, we did.
No, we did the whole thing. I remember the whole thing.
I thought that we were hiking and they were sort of alongside us. No, but we did it. Okay.
We did. And in fact, I'd highly recommend doing the ranger programs here because I do think, I'm going to be quite frank. Look, you know, old growth forests are beautiful, but at a certain point, it's going to be a tree is a tree is a tree. You know,
that happened to us after 4 days. It did.
There's a lot of trees and you're like, that's a beautiful tree. You're like, wow, that's a big tree. Right. But like, you're kind of like, okay, what else? The ranger programs really help bring alive the ecological importance of these things. The environmental impacts, the historical impacts of
the
timber industry and everything. So really, I think that ranger programs are incredibly important for really enjoying this park.
What you said was so true. And listen, to anyone going to the Redwoods this summer, it was amazing. But after 4 days, we had little kids and it was like, yeah, we experienced it. It wasn't that we were bored or anything, but we felt like we got what we wanted to get out of it. And we were ready to move on to the next leg of our trip because it was a 26-day trip across the Pacific Northwest. But I would love to go back. I mean, there are certain places. I thought Badlands National Park was incredible. I'm going to be really honest. I don't have a super strong desire to go back. Redwoods National Park, I would absolutely go out of my way to get back there.
All right. So there's more than just like I did say, oh, trees, trees, trees. Look, there's different areas of the park that have much different kinds of landscapes, right? So there's the coastal area that has the Hidden Beach Trail, which we did spend a lot of time on the beach there. There's also Fern Canyon, which is, you know, phenomenal. It's in like, you know, movies, right? Like
Jurassic
and everything
Park
because yeah, it's yeah, it's just got that kind of look to it and everything.
And that's the most that was the most crowded thing we did. So you need to plan wisely to go to Fern Canyon, get there early, do it a weekday,
yeah, I would
not
just
a weekend.
Watch your times. Yeah, exactly. During the week, early in the morning, and it probably won't be as bad. There's also Crescent City. There's the downtown area there. That's also where the park headquarters is. And like I said, it's a very different kind of headquarters than a lot of the time you're used to at National Parks. It's in the middle of the downtown and it doesn't really feel like a lot of them, but it's worth a stop in. And that's also where I saw people talking, like asking questions about dispersed camping and what was available. You know, they were looking for campgrounds and everything there. So, you know, there is a lot of diversity. I don't want to make it sound like it is just walking around looking at trees.
And a huge part of that was that coastal trail.
This is a hard trip not to plan. You know, I really think you kind of have to really have an idea of where you're going to go and what you're going to say.
100%.
Oh, and another, I'm going to put one more thing in there is you will be shocked by how long it takes you to drive on that portion of the PCH. Is it the PCH up there? Is it called that still?
There was traffic most mornings, but there was also a lot of construction going on.
A lot of construction. So it's a small window of time that they can work on that road with washouts and everything like that. So quite often there's areas that are closer that are down to one lane and they're like routing, you know, and some people have to stop and let the other through. So, you know, it took longer to navigate different parts of the park than we were expecting. So I just want to flag that.
Surprisingly, and you're so right. It wasn't construction. It was like road repair. So Sherry wrote in and said, do Trees of Mystery, which I think that's like a ticketed thing. And we did not do that. Mm-mm. And she also said the Jedediah Smith Campground and Forest Trails around there. Gina wrote in and said, do the tide pooling at Sumeg State Park. That's also something we did not do. That sounds awesome. So have an awesome time at the Redwoods. That was so on our bucket list and just a really magical, a magical part of that trip to the Pacific Northwest for us. So we're going to come back in a second and we're going to talk about Lake George, New York and what the best campground options are there because there's sort of some people trying to figure out where they should camp. And there's two amazing options that people debate about all of the time. So we'll come back to talk about Lake George, New York. But before we do so, we have a sponsored message from our friends at RV Share. With over 4 million nights booked and thousands of five-star reviews from happy customers, RV Share is America's number one RV rental site. With a wide-ranging inventory from affordable pop-up campers to luxury motorhomes, RV Share has a rental that is perfect for you. Whether you are looking for a pet-friendly RV or an RV that can be delivered directly to your campsite, RV Share makes the entire rental process simple and fun. Each booking on RV Share also includes 24/7 roadside assistance for the ultimate peace of mind on the road. No matter where the open road is taking you, get ready to use your outside voice because as soon as you step inside your RV rental, the adventure begins. Book your RV now for the solar eclipse this April and make sure to check out RV Share's Total Solar Eclipse RV Guide on rvshare.com. This landing page has great resources like solar eclipse packing tips and lists, solar eclipse family activities, and links to rentals in each state in the path of totality. Check out rvshare.com to find out more and use promo code RVATLAS30 for $30 off a booking of $500 or more. That's rvshare.com and promo code RVATLAS30 for $30 off a booking of $500 or more. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are back with a question about Lake George, New York and Lake Winnipesaukee, New Hampshire. We have more to say about Lake George, New York, because we've been several times as opposed to Lake Winnipesaukee, where we've been once. Bill wrote in and asked this. Looking for any personal recommendations for campgrounds around Lake George, New York and Lake Winnipesaukee, New Hampshire. We are looking to extend our Portland Seco Maine trip by adding these stops on our way up from Southeast Pennsylvania. Any insight is greatly appreciated. Now, I'll keep the Lake Winnipesaukee part pretty short. There's a beautiful Jellystone called the Lakes Region Jellystone. I don't know if Bill's into doing a Jellystone. I don't know if he's traveling with kids or not, but it is actually on the lake and it's one of the prettiest Jellystones that we have ever set eyes upon. And then there's also, I believe, this is going back a while since we were in New Hampshire, I believe it's Eloquia State Park. So that's something to look at too. Now, Lake George,
and New York, no dogs. I always like to point that out. You said State Park. If you are traveling with a furry friend, you cannot stay overnight at a New Hampshire State Park campground.
Live free or die. As long as you don't have a dog, then you don't get as much freedom.
Sorry, okay. I just am like paranoid that New Hampshire. Somebody's going to,
Stephanie's 100% right. Now, Lake George, New York is one of these locations where there are sort of like a twin towers of camping, like two amazing options that are both loved by so many people, and they're both really different. So, and there's lots of other campgrounds too, but I feel like these two are the top and then everything else kind of fall below them. So there's Moose Hillock, New York, and there's the Lake George RV Resort. People, these are the types of campgrounds that families go to every summer for their summer vacation. Like, that's where they go. Like, that's why they bought an RV, to go to Moose Hillock, to go to Lake George RV Resort. And people debate which one is better. I'm not going to say which one is better, because this is truly one of the cases where they're both really very different, and it just depends on what you want. So Stephanie, would you agree with that? These are just two very, very different campgrounds. Both awesome.
Yeah, well, you know, they're both resorts and they both have a ton of amenities. So like we're not juxtaposing some sort of rustic, beautiful state park with, you know, waterside resort kind of place. Like they are these, both of these places are amenity rich.
But I would say like George RV Resort has even more in terms of amenities.
Yes, maybe a longer list. But they're different. The vibe is different. I mean, look, Lake George RV Resort is kind of royalty in the camping resort space.
With so Normandy there was Farms, it's one of the originals.
Exactly. There, you know, before anybody knew what RV resorts were, you had Normandy Farms and Lake George RV Resort in the Northeast, sort of, you know, coming out of this really strong tradition of people leaving New York City area and everything and going away and going for their summer vacations in the lakes, right? So these resorts grew up kind of before everybody else jumped on the bandwagon. So Lake George RV Resort has been around for decades and decades. Moose Hillock is a newer kid on the block. And they have, the vibe of Lake George RV Resort is to me a little more like buttoned up, like a little more older school, like a little more formal. Yeah, like a little more formal. Almost like New England-y
resort.
And Moose Hillock is a little more party palace, kind of. I mean, I'm not saying it's
in a way. Yeah.
I just think it's a little more like, you know.
Go be yourself.
Moose Hillock is like, you know, there's the dances and the music. And like, they both have live entertainment because that's a big thing in the summer in the Adirondacks region and everything, right? Like, summer entertainment. The comedians, again, they used to come out of the city. Right. And they'd come to these resorts that were in the lakes regions. So they still have that kind of stuff going on. But I feel like Lake George RV Resort is a little more like landscaped and stuff, you know, like
I feel like it's more like an actual resort, not an RV resort. Now, but here's the primary difference in my mind. And for somebody who's trying to pick where to stay, Lake George RV Resort, I think, has a lot more amenities overall. But the sites are a lot smaller and less private to some degree. Mm-hmm. Moose Hillock has less in terms of an amazing pool.
Yeah.
But overall, less amenities throughout the campground. But the sites are gigantic and private. They are like, some of them are like the size of three sites. And almost all of them are like twice the size of other sites.
Well, it's like absurd. Like people see these sites and they go, I've never, like, what? This is so bizarre. It's so big, right?
Like you look into some of these sites and you see like this fifth wheel tucked back like 50 yards back into the site. And so, look, at Lake George RV Resort, you're paying a premium for amenities.
Yeah.
At Moose Hillock, I really believe you're paying a premium for huge, awesome, gorgeous private sites and a really incredible pool.
Yeah,
I don't
I
think you can go wrong at either place. If you want nonstop activity where your like kids can take off kind of for the day, Lake George RV Resort.
Yes.
Maybe if you have like younger kids and you just want to hang at the pool and then have an awesome site, Moose Hillock. But it's a win-win in Lake George with those two campgrounds.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like for the amenities part, like it would be like in the Lake George RV Resort, there's like basketball courts that are like beautiful, multiple basketball courts. And Moose Hillock, it's like, playground ball, you know, and it's like the one and the kids are all there like shooting around. Yeah. So it does have that sort of, if you've been to the Sun Outdoors in Myrtle Beach, look at me calling it by its right name. Finally.
You mean Carolina Pines?
Carolina Pines. To me, Lake George RV Resort has more of that feel to it. You know what I mean? Like pickleball courts and dog park and everything is like,
it's like a New York version of Carolina Pines.
Yeah. Yeah. They remind me of each other. Yeah.
Okay, so we had a couple people. We actually had a lot. It was really split. A lot of people said Moose Hillock. A lot of people said Lake George RV Resort. I don't think anybody recommended anywhere else. So Sarah said Lake George RV Resort. I've been camping there since I was 2 months that old, since I was 2 months old with my family. And now I'm back bringing my own kids every year. We try to go somewhere else, but always come back. It is it is a family tradition for a lot of people. Jen wrote in and said, Moose Hillock, biggest, most private sites I have ever seen. They are bigger, nicer, more beautiful sites than even the best state parks. And they are. And so, but you do have to pay for them.
Now, and you do, and I would like to, I just check on minimum booking because I know that Moose Hillock has a week minimum during their peak season. I'm not sure if Lake George RV Resort does at this point.
They might too, but
they might also. Yeah. So really double check on that because that is another thing that you'll see in the Northeast is that these there's some of these places that they have such a short season and they're so popular that they just tell people you're coming for a week or you're not coming at all.
And they and they sell out. Like they fill up.
No, people do it. So they don't have to worry about it. So yeah, just double check that if you're thinking of adding these on.
Look, in the grand scheme of things, as an RV owner, try both of them at different points if you can. They're both really wonderful, wonderful campgrounds. We're going to come back in a second and just talk a little bit about tankless water heaters. But before we do so, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Go Power. Go Power has been the industry leader for mobile solar solutions since 1996. From their beginnings as a small Canadian distributor of solar energy products, GoPower has grown to become one of North America's leading suppliers of recreational and business solar solutions. Their high-quality solar panels, inverters, controllers, and batteries offer a durable, dependable, and cost-effective solution for your mobile power needs when you are camping without hookups or boondocking far off-grid. We have had GoPower solar systems on two of our RVs, and they have been absolute game changers for us. They allow us to boondock, dry camp, and driveway surf, and still charge our devices at night and make coffee in the morning. GoPower not only makes the best equipment, they also offer the best support. The support section on GoPower's website offers technical support, installation assistance, and answers to FAQs. There has never been a better time to add a GoPower solar system to your RV and hit the open road. And with over 1 million solar panels sold and 28 years of experience, GoPower is the brand to trust for your mobile power needs. To find out more, follow them on Instagram at GoPowerSolar and head on over to their website at GoPowerSolar.com. That's GoPowerSolar.com. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are here, Stephanie and I, doing another RV Atlas Q&A episode. And our last question was about tankless water heaters from Katie. Katie wrote into the RV Atlas group and said, any recommendations for tankless water heaters for travel trailers? We found many affordable options. Is this a you get what you pay for kind of thing or don't overpay kind of thing? Thanks in advance. Now, we had the Truma Aqua Go on our toy hauler and we had the Truma Aqua Go on our Jayco Eagle HT.
Yeah.
And now we have the Furion on the Grand Design. Now, the Grand Design came standard with the Furion tankless water heater. If it had come with a 6 or 12 gallon, you know, standard one, I would have replaced it and got the Truma Aqua Go.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going to do that because I got a tankless water heater and I was like, well, let's give it a try. Now, the Truma Aqua Go, I think, is one of the absolutely best aftermarket RV accessories ever created. It is bulletproof. It is really hard to break. It is really, it just works and works.
It's easy to use. It's amazing. It is like, you know, it's like a German sports car. Okay.
It is.
It's amazing. It's just, that's the end. Like, so when I see a question like this, I'm like, yeah, I do think this area is a you get what you pay for because I get it. It's expensive. But to me, well, I remember I was kind of like, oh, this is the same price as an iPhone. And
it was
like,
over $1,000 pre-COVID. The current price was probably more like $1,300.
Yeah, right. It's probably gone up. But I was like, this makes every single day that you're in your RV so much better.
For someone that's not initiated, so for someone who doesn't really understand the product,
yeah.
If you have a standard RV water heater and there's five of you, three kids, mom and dad, and everyone wants to take a shower at night, the last two people might not get a hot shower. They might have to wait for
the last three people. Okay. Yeah. And you know, heaven forbid you need to do dishes and then take a shower. Or, you know, I mean, it just takes so long for that tank to reheat too. And, you know, the whole thing is like, and it's like, you know, it's scalding water. So you're putting your cold on too, right? And wasting so much water trying to get that temperature. And the thing about the Truma Aqua Go when we first got it was I realized that, like, yes, you wait a sec. Like, you can have it on a couple different modes. But yes, it will run before it gets hot. So you have to, like, if you're boondocking, you know, whatever, you have to, like, come up with your, you know, strategy for maybe capturing that water or not letting it down the drain if that's really important to you. So it takes a second. And then once it comes out, you have to understand it is the this perfect steady temperature. Like, it doesn't take a long time to heat up and then slowly you lose it.
It's right? Just like a home shower.
It's so weird how it maintains the same exact temperature and you can run it forever.
Our youngest child, well, all of our kids, like really long hot showers.
Yes.
And I'll never forget them like taking a really long hot shower and then like opening the door when they were done, like all of the steam escaping into the RV.
Because like if you're hooked up to sewer, it doesn't matter, right? It was just kind of like the water was coming in and they were just in that hot shower forever. So it was very hard for us to imagine going without that once we'd had it.
I've also used the Truma Combi, which is a totally different product. But
yes.
Look, Truma makes premium products that have an incredibly, incredibly low service or warranty rate. Mm-hmm. They hardly ever need to be worked on. And my suspicion is, like, it's when people break them or user error. Yeah. I just think those things work and work and work. Now, people do like the Furrion that we have. And we had our first year with the Grand Design, the Furrion worked really well. It takes a bit longer to heat up.
Yes.
To the point where the first time I dewinterized, I thought it wasn't working. But I just wasn't waiting long enough. But it does work really, really well. One of the odd things is the Truma is so easy to winterize. You basically just drain the water out of it and you isolate it and it's a piece of cake. The Furrion, oddly enough, our dealer and Grand Design owners across the country, you keep it tied in to your RV's plumbing and you actually run antifreeze through it because the coils, apparently the coils, if they have any little bit of water left in them, can freeze and crack. So you winterize this with antifreeze, which threw me off a little bit. But I don't know, so far so good on the Furrion, and it is less expensive. I don't know about the longevity and the durability, but I can't say anything good or bad about that because we've only had this Grand Design about a year. A couple people did write in. Greg Adams, we have a Furrion RV tankless gas 60,000 BTU water heater on our 29-foot unit. Love it. We do both full hookup and boondocking and have not had any problems. Brian wrote in and said, unless you have a small trailer, don't go with anything that isn't capable of 60,000 BTUs. The Truma AquaGo is the best you can get. However, it is the most expensive by far. Look, it's so many times in life, you pay a bit more and you get something that's not necessarily going to work better, but that is going to work longer.
Yeah, and we're not taking out what we have to replace it with the
Truma. No, but if it breaks, I'm getting a Truma.
But, right, we wouldn't replace it with that, right? And I've heard a lot of people do say that the Girard is a little bit tricky to manage the temperature, like to find the setting that's the right hot water temperature. I've heard multiple people say it took a lot of fiddling.
Right, but a lot of people like the Girard, and Brian went on to say that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people do like that one. Listen, everyone, we're taking off next week on spring break. We know a lot of you are also taking off. So travel safely. Take your time. Don't rush. Have an awesome time. Make memories with family and friends at the campground. And where should we camp next? Budget Camping comes out next week.
While we're on vacation.
While we're on vacation. And we will probably not have reception.
Yeah.
If you want a great book, it's going to help you save a lot of money. Hope you pick up a copy of Where Should We Camp Next? Budget Camping.
We know how to budget.
Over 350 campground reviews in all 50 states. This book will pay for itself. And there's free and low-cost activities in it. There's low-cost and budget-friendly camping gear, budget camping hacks. This book will save you money. But more importantly, I'm truly wishing everyone a great spring break because I know that so many of you out there are working hard and we've all earned a vacation next week. So safe travels, everybody. See you at the campground.
See you at the campground. Thank you so much for joining us for the 10th anniversary season of the RV Atlas.
To find out more about the topics discussed on this show, head on over to thervatlas.com.
And to join the friendliest group of RVers, head on over to the RV Atlas group on Facebook and make sure to join us on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram at the RV Atlas.
And if you enjoy our show, please consider leaving us a review over on iTunes or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
And make sure to pick up copies of Where Should We Camp Next, wherever books are sold.
And we will see you at the campground.